Children, we're starting.
That's right.
Showtime!
Another Fresh Picked Pod from audio2u.com. Shutters Inc. with Shelton Muller.
Might wish to stay on and listen.
Hi, and welcome to episode 103 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from audio2u.com. With me on the line once again via Skype from Melbourne, Mr. Shelton Muller. How are you?
Hey, g'day, mate. How you doing?
Pretty good, and you?
I'm very well. I was thinking the other day, here we are, well, this is episode 103. Imagine if you tried to keep up the, you know, Lord of the Lens kind of thing for 103 episodes.
Mate, we'd be tragically scraping the bottom of the barrel
yes,
by now.
That's right. I don't know what, we would have had to find every accessory and put some sort of alliterative title to it, you know, by now. So
it would have become
I'm glad you decided to give that up while you were ahead, mate.
Yeah. You know. I'm not even sure that we got out of it that early, to be honest.
The Melbourne Herald Sun just referred to me as the guru. You know,
so
perhaps, yes. Oh, trust me, all my friends just give me heaps about that. You know, the guru, you know. We played a bit of a gig the other night at my sister's property. We had a Woodstock.
Oh, that's right. How was it?
Oh, it was terrific. Yeah, it was Woodstock without the sex, drugs, and nudity, you know, which everybody said, well, what's the point of coming? You know. But it was an open property, and we fired it up and turned it up to 11.
Yep.
And had a good time. But yeah, the girl who sings with us, Jody, she wrote a parody song based on Ben Lee's Catch My Disease.
Oh, okay.
And she wrote even a line I had to sing about myself in it called, they, you know, they'll even let me on the radio, and that's the way I like it. You know, and then they've even called me the guru, and that's the way I like it. Yeah, so I had to sing this song about myself, you know, at this gig. Oh, well, you know.
So how many people were there?
Oh, I don't know, about 100 turned up, I suppose.
Oh, my God, really?
Yeah, it was fun. It was a bit of fun. You know, we set up on the porch, a big porch my sister's got.
So why didn't you get me down there to mix it?
Oh, you have to get me up to Sydney, mate. You know, but it was a bit of fun. If there's any video lying around, I'll have to throw it on YouTube.
Oh, that'd be cool.
But yeah, it was a bit of fun. So maybe we should just stick with the guru, you know? We'll stick with that. Well, we've had some interesting responses to our last, and some emails from people, which is terrific.
You know, I've got to say, we never got any submissions from anyone with their homemade bouquets.
No, not a submission as such, just a couple of emails.
Mm.
But, Well, perhaps it's one of those things that just takes a little bit of time for people to do. Admittedly, here I am spouting it and I haven't had a chance to do it myself.
Yeah.
So I can't really give our listeners a stick when I've, you know, not
Fair
done
enough.
It myself. But on that subject, we did get an email from Walt in Newfoundland.
Yep.
And it says, hey, Shelton, I'm sure if you've ever checked out www.diyphotography.net
mm-hmm.
before for the do-it-yourselfers.
Yep. We've linked to those in previous show notes.
Mm. There's an entry there about customizing your bouquet, like you were discussing on the show. Being a DIY site, it also shows you how to go about doing it. Here's the direct link, and then it gives me the URL. Now, did you get that email
no.
from Walt?
No, no? Walt sent that just to you.
Right, okay. Well, we can perhaps put that up on audio2u.com so everybody can check it out. Thank you, Walt, for submitting that.
Mm-hmm.
And the pictures you sent, Walt says, P.S. I was home in Newfoundland over Christmas and reminded of the fact that there actually was that much snowfall when I was growing up. I had begun to doubt my memory of the over-the-house snowdrifts. I've attached a few snow-related pictures. Walt, thank you for sending those through. They remind me of my upbringing. I was raised in the wilderness just outside of Prince George in Vancouver in my childhood, outside of Prince George in British Columbia. And we used to fall into the snow up to our chests, you know, no problems.
Wow.
So it was quite incredible. So I was looking at these pictures Walt sent, and I really appreciate them, Walt. Thank you, because they remind me of my own childhood in the snow. It's terrific. Another one from Jim Felder. Thank you, Jim. Hey, guys, I was just thinking, you could try doing a live podcast. Have you heard of TalkShoe.com? Have you heard of TalkShoe.com, Bruce?
Now, this is one email that I did get as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually wrote back to Jim and said, Knowing how hard it is for Shelton and I to actually agree on a time to get together.
and we're in the same time zone.
Exactly. I said, you know, trying to schedule something that would, you know, actually lock us down to a finite time might actually be harder than you would imagine.
That's right.
And I actually went on and explained to Jim that part of my reluctance towards this idea, and I think it's a valid idea. I understand where Jim's coming from. Yeah. The rest of his email was, you know, you could do this and this would allow listeners to call in like a live radio show and be able to do talk back with Shelton and I and interact and blah, blah, blah. And as much as I appreciate where Jim was coming from, as I said to Jim when I replied to him in my email, the thing about that is it brings to podcasting what I hate about radio, and that is the fact that you have to listen at the time that the broadcaster dictates. You know, the whole beauty for me anyway, the whole beauty of podcasting was this non-linearity of when you can consume the content.
Non-linearity?
Yeah, I like that.
I'm going to write that down. Fantastic.
You can incorporate that into a photo workshop at some point.
Oh,
I'm sure.
Yeah, I got one on Saturday. So yeah, absolutely.
But you know, that was what attracted me to podcasting in the beginning, was the fact that, you know, someone can produce great content that, you know, I, you know, eventually find and think, wow, that's content that I want to hear every week. But the whole beauty of it is I'm not locked into listening to it at a particular time of the day because that's when it's being broadcast. A podcast allows me to download it, chuck it on my iPod, listen to it whenever I want, listen to it as many times as I want, stop it, start it, rewind, do everything that I want to do with it that radio doesn't let me do.
Yes.
And so that was kind of my reluctance to the idea. But anyway, go ahead and read the rest of Jim's email.
Oh, I've minimized it now. Oh. Okay, here we are. Okay, it's where you can record a podcast. Yeah. It's really great to be a listener of your podcast, but it would be even better if we could ask questions live. I think you've sort of covered Jim's question there. Yeah. Look, it's something we can certainly toy with, Jim, but I think Bruce has got a point. It's hard enough he and I getting together, let alone you guys way up in Oklahoma. I mean, you're in Oklahoma, Jim. Yeah, it's a completely different time zone. I battle getting enough sleep as it is, my friend. So, a nice idea, but I think, you know, Bruce and I would have to put our foot down and say, you guys get out of bed. You know, I'm not getting out of bed. No, you guys get out of bed. You want to talk to me? You want to talk to me? You get out of bed, okay? So
the other side of that, too, is that, you know, as a rule, and as much as I say, we do tend to shift it around a bit, but as a rule, Shelton and I record at 9 o'clock on a Thursday morning, which for the majority of America would mean mid-afternoon Wednesday, and I'm not sure how many people would be able to actually tune in, because most people are at work anyway.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah, that's true. So, thank you, Jim. Look, we really love that you're a listener. And
absolutely.
A great idea. If the logistics could be, you know, could be changed, it would be interesting to do once or twice. I do a radio segment here in Melbourne on Radio 3AW, which is it's probably it's Melbourne's most listened to radio station, especially because it's talkback and they have some excellent, you know, people handling the talkback. And I do a regular section there on 3AW about photography, and it's great because I can field questions live and people have a place to go that's neutral where they, you know, nobody has an agenda. They can just ask a question and I will give them the best answer I can come up with live on air. It's daunting, let me tell you this.
Question.
You know, there's,
how much notice do you get from AW before they say, you know, are you free to come on?
Like, I've had as little as 2 hours.
Oh, really?
This time I've got about, you know, 2 weeks notice, because last time I was on air with Dennis Walter, he said, we'll see you in a couple of weeks, Shelton. And I thought, yeah, beautiful. So I know that this coming Sunday at 4 o'clock, I'm going to be on Radio 3AW.
Well, there you go, people. If anyone, oh, so that's Sunday.
This coming Sunday.
So okay. Well,
I will have already done it by the time these
by the time this podcast gets out. However, what I can do is at least post on shuttersincpodcast.com an advisory, so that if anyone, you know, wants to call in, even if you are an international caller, if you really want to have a chat with Shelton,
why not?
I'll you know, it'll all be past history by the time you actually hear this podcast, but I will have posted on shuttersyncpodcast.com a link to, or, you know, advisory that Shelton will be on 3AW this weekend, or last weekend, as the case may be. And, yeah, so if you feel really inclined, you could ring up from wherever you are on the planet, ring 3AW, tell them you're a listener to Shutters Inc. and that you want to talk to Shelton. You want to talk to the guru. Yeah.
Talk to the guru. There's a photographer friend I've made in Kentucky in the United States. Her name is Heather Morris. Blue Door Studio Photography, I think, or something like that. Heather Morris in Kentucky. And I've told her about my radio stints, and she's threatened to call from Kentucky. So why not?
Cool. You know?
Why not? And Heather, it'd be nice to hear from you if you're listening to this sometime on the radio. I tell you what, it'd certainly impress 3AW, wouldn't it? We've got a call from the United States.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So feel free to call, gang. I'll keep you posted as to when I'm on, perhaps via my blog or via audiotu.com. So, Jim, a great idea, and it is, you know, I do it here in Melbourne, and it works really well. So, you know, we're not in any way... putting it down, it's just difficult sometimes to arrange when you've got listeners all over the world, and we do have listeners all over the world.
Absolutely.
So, you know, it would be interesting. We'll think about it. Now, Carlos Rivera, you have sent us 3 emails, and so I'm just going to go through them very, very quickly. Carlos, first of all, you say you're very interested in wedding photography, and that's what we're going to start talking about today. We're going to do our part one wedding photography.
I can hear Walt in Newfoundland going, yay!
Or, hey, that's great, eh? So it'd be something like that. Yes, Walt's just jumping up and down. Good on you, Walt. Fantastic, mate. This was all your idea. So I want everybody to send Walt an email going, thanks, mate. Or, you know, we're going to be handling this for the next few weeks. So if we suddenly just sort of lose a whole lot of listeners and we get one download, we know Walt's really enjoying it. You know? So, but Carlos, of course, is saying, I'm also very interested in wedding photography, so please jump on it. I can't wait to hear what you have to say. You said that in the past that Australia has the best wedding photographers. Who are they, please? Drop the names. Okay, well, one is me, Carlos, okay? All right, let's just get that out there. Love you much, and please click on my link. Feel free to let me know what you think about my site and images. All right, I will, Carlos. I certainly will. I'm sure we all will. Carlos Rivera Photography. So thank you, Carlos. We'll get on to that today. A couple of others. You asked the question, Carlos. Hi, Shelton. This is my second email. I know. Like you, I said I'm a big fan of off-camera flash. Oh, Carlos, we're friends already. My question is possible to work this way without an assistant? Please take at my off-camera image. Okay. Love you guys. Okay. So very affectionate man, our Carlos. Very affectionate man. We love you too, mate. Absolutely. And he's got a link to a blog about strobes in the sun. I'll send that to you so we can put that on audiotu.com. Mm-hmm. But yes, Carlos, to answer your question, with off-camera flash, there's lots of ways you can do it. Depending on how far you are from the subject, sometimes I just hold my camera with one hand and I'll put my left hand outstretched and hold my flash. The other day I was photographing a wedding, and there's this building here in Melbourne in St Kilda called the Palais, and it has this beautiful facade, and it's right next to Luna Park, which was an amusement sort of park here in Melbourne. We were doing some photography in Luna Park. They actually let us on the beautiful old merry-go-round that we were on, and I got some great photographs. They're on my blog if you want to look at one of them, or my Flickr site. But we walked over to the front of the Palais, and I wanted to do a low-angle perspective and a wide-angle and off-camera flash with a stop or two underexposure. But I couldn't. I had nobody with me. All the bridal party had completely disappeared. Don't know where they'd gone. I had a bride, a groom, and me. And all of a sudden, this fella just walks past. And I just said, oh, excuse me, mate, you're busy? And he said, no. And I said, look, would you hold this for me? So he said, yeah, okay. He was a Maori fellow, New Zealand fellow. very nice bloke, and he just stood there for about 5 minutes while I did this shoot with the bridegroom, holding my flash, and I said, "Oh, did that fire?" And he go, "Yeah, yeah, fired," or "No, it didn't fire." And he was my instant assistant. So Carlos, yes, I have had to work with an assistant, but normally what I would do is I'd put the flash either on my monopod with the legs sticking out, or on a tripod if I didn't have an assistant, and just sort of, you know, place it anywhere I like. I've done that many times. I did a shoot with American guitarist Charlie Hitchcock while he was here in Australia recently, and we were up on top of a roof in St Kilda, South Melbourne, and you know, I had to do some off-camera flash with him, and I took my tripod up on this roof and I set the tripod up. I shot handheld, but I put my flash on the tripod to create the effect. And it was fantastic. So an assistant, a monopod, a tripod, anything like that will do. But it is a fantastic, fantastic way of controlling your light. So I hope that's of some help to you. But look, grab a passerby. This fella got a kick out of it, Carlos. He really did. You know, here he was on a shoot with a photographer and a bride and groom. He was just walking by, you know, had nothing else to do. So I grabbed him and enlisted his assistance. It was terrific. So, and your third email, thank you so much, Carlos, for your very kind words. He says, I'm reaching 40. I passed that. I'm 40 plus GST, Carlos. I'm 40 plus sales tax, mate. So I'm reaching 40 and in the process of reinventing myself. So it's Carlos Rivera Madonna, Kylie Minogue. Because these people all reinvent themselves and look what happens. And I think it's a very clever thing. Good on you. I bought my first camera at my hometown in Brooklyn at the age of 17. And then he goes on, of course, to discuss his love of photography. His question is, he says, I began to listen to the podcast again from the very beginning. And it's as if I heard it for the first time. I'm Shelton Muller, photo editor of Total Image and Better Pictures. And that is when it hit me. How does one become a photo editor? I know my age may be an issue, but that is one of my questions. And the other, what do you recommend a photographer to do when the market is saturated the way it is? I've been thinking to move out of Northern California, but how do I find where my business would do best? What would you do? Okay, first question is...
Can I answer that?
Yeah.
I would say, just perfect your art.
Hmm.
And business will find you.
I think so.
You don't need to relocate. You just need to be good at what you do.
Everybody has a unique perspective. Yours is unique, Carlos, even as mine is unique. And I agree with Bruce completely.
And I'm not knocking your photography, Carlos. Don't get me wrong. I'm not criticizing what you're doing. I think you've done some great work.
Yes.
But just from a business perspective, it's not about where you are. It's just about how good you do it.
Yes. Yes, I've heard of incredible success stories where people have set up in tiny little towns with a very minimal population and made so much money and had so much success because they're a big fish in a little pond. You know, whereas you can be a little fish in a big pond and still get a lot of work. I think it really is about your vision. And I was talking about this again with Heather in Kentucky because she's just rearranged all her wedding packages. And I said, you know what? I had this discussion with a fellow photographer who said to me, Shelton, you're too cheap. You need to up your prices. And I said, okay, tell me why and tell me how. And he said, well, when people call you, what's their question? Like, what do they say? How much are you? When they contact you, do they say, look, this is the date I'm, you know, what do they say? And I say, well, what they usually do is they will email me or they'll call me and they'll say, are you available on June the 14th? And that's their first question. And my friend Paul, he said, well, then they're not concerned about your price in the slightest. They want to know that they're already sold. They've been to your website. They've seen your work. They heard about you through somebody else. They're already sold. They don't really care what you charge, but they just want to hope that you're available on the day they're getting married. So you're too cheap. Now, you know, I'm one of these guys who probably is, you know, shocking at business and a good photographer or whatever. But he makes a point. And he's true. When people contact me, their question is usually, are you available on this date? Paul said then, you know, he said to me, so when you tell them your price, they're basically saying, he's available and he is a good price. And I thought, well, okay. But I mean, I don't want to rip people off. I believe that my price, you know, is good for what I do. But, you know, you've got to be competitive. Carlos, I think, to be honest with you, and I'll get back to my point. Heather has rearranged her packages. And I said, you know what? People don't buy packages. I don't believe that people buy wedding packages, for one. I believe they buy a photographer, and what packages he offers, they choose out of. Right? Oh, I like his work, and he's got these three. Okay, I'll take that one. But really, you've already sold them on your work. And I think Bruce is absolutely right. Perfect your craft. Make it Carlos Rivera photography. Make it yours. You know, as we were talking about last week on the podcast, I have a particular vision and perspective that, you know, people can look at my work and say, yep, that's Shelton Miller's work. I look at it and say, that's the framework within, you know, that I work within. I'm always trying to stretch that. But, you know, I could describe my, technique, process, as I did last week. I think you've got to do the same and then say, well, this is Carlos Rivera's perspective. Do you like it? Good. Well, you buy it. And, I don't know whether I would uproot myself and move somewhere else and then risk. I would use the relationships you've established where you are and build your business from there. I imagine Northern California is very heavily saturated. But if you look at websites of local photographers, Carlos, I think you'll also find that part of that saturation is some pretty average, if not less than average, photography. I mean, my area is saturated too. Everybody who has a camera these days wants to get out and make some money to get their money back. So there is that kind of saturation. And they will immediately choose the portrait wedding market because it's domestic and it's easily accessible. And they don't, you know, they're not going into ad agencies without portfolios. They're basically, if they can shoot a wedding and get a little bit of a portfolio up and running, a few snapshots they took at a friend's wedding, they've got a couple to show to others, they slowly build a portfolio, they get some work. But they've never been trained, their work is terrible, they have basic equipment. And so sooner or later, either they'll do well because they're good business people, or they'll just, you know, fade into oblivion. But if you've got a good vision, and you do, stay where you are and build on that. As for becoming an editor, now that's an interesting question. I became an editor because I was tired of going into news agencies and stores and buying photographic magazines that told me very, very little. And I got so sick of it. I was so sick of hearing about the lives of other photographers and how I did this shoot and how good I am and how long I'm growing my ponytail and what kind of car I drive. And I thought, please, good on you. I'm glad you're photographing supermodels and getting paid $10,000 a day to do it. Good on you, buddy. That's fantastic. But, you know, how do I get that shot? How do I take that shot? I don't know how to take that shot. It's a good shot. No wonder they're paying you that kind of money. But you know what? I really want to learn how to take that kind of shot. And I wanted to produce a magazine that wasn't about all that factor, you know, all the look at me and how good I am and I've done this and this is what I do. I wanted to basically produce a photography magazine that said, you know what, it's not that hard, this is what you do. And I put together a proposal, I fielded it to different publishers because I certainly didn't have the money to publish it myself at the time. And eventually, after taking the proposal to various publishers, one took it on board, and I worked with them for a few years. But my proposal was, and I suppose I did a bit of a Bill Gates here, I went in and I said, look, if you're doing this, I want to be the editor, and I want to be I want to have creative control, final say on the creative. Because if I didn't have those things, to me, it was no point doing it. I would just be some guy, puppet of a publishing company. And I just went in there and I you know, had the wherewithal to say, this is what I'm going to be. And they said, yeah, well, of course, no problem. And so suddenly I became the editor of a photography magazine simply because the publishing company took on my proposal. I have no degree in journalism. I have no degree in photography. I am a high school dropout, and I'm just telling you all, this is the Shelton Miller you're talking to. I have taken my gift, and this is what we were talking about, and I have processed it, practiced it, expanded on it, perfected it. Well, I'm still perfecting it. I'll be perfecting it till my last breath. But this is basically what I'm saying to you, Carlos. To become a photo editor for me was not about getting a journalism degree. When I started working in photography, it was because I'd left school. I was sick of this crappy high school I was at. It had a budget of about $17.50 a year. And I just got the hell out of there, and I worked in a camera store. But you know what? Here's the interesting thing, Carlos. I was working in a camera store at age 17 with university graduates. These guys had spent 4 years at the Royal Melbourne Institute of Technology and other universities learning photography, only so that they could wind up selling cameras and filling out, developing and printing forms in a photo retail store when they got out. And I thought, that is so sad, because they went into university with these aspirations of becoming photographers, but they themselves lacked something within that drove them to just swallow hard and get it out there. And you know what? The other thing about it was that they had learned this craft for 4 years. They had a degree in it and couldn't take a picture to save their flaming lives. I'm serious. And again, I relate it to music. You know, I can pick up a guitar and play a tune. I don't know how to read music, but I have a gift for it to a degree. I can't read music, but you know what? Neither could Paul McCartney, but look what he wrote. Mm. You know, Long and Winding Road, for Pete's sake. What a classic. But and Yesterday, you know, the most covered song in human history. So I have basically become a photographer because that's what I wanted to do. And I took a risk. I swallowed hard. I have known periods when I've been down on my last 25 cents, quite literally, and just risked it. And that's what you've got to do. You've got to put it on the line and say, this is what I'm going to do. And if you have the tenacity and you're a bit smart, you know, and work along with your gift, you can do it. And you can even become a photo editor. Carlos, if you want to become a photo editor, put together a proposal for either an online magazine or a published magazine. Approach some, come up with a niche idea, approach publishers, and get them to pay for it. And you will suddenly become a photo editor. But the thing was, I knew two things about myself. I knew that I could photograph, and I knew that I could write. Three things. I also knew that I could teach. I am a good teacher, I know that. So I combined.
Surprise. Our two men. Sorry.
I couldn't resist.
I thought there was a problem with our sound there. For a moment. I thought, hang on, something's squelching here. There's something really weird going on. And I knew those three things about myself. I combined them and have basically taken them to form my what I do. My mum was saying the other day, someone asked her what I do, and she said, oh, it's hard to sort of describe what Shelton does. He teaches, he's a photographer, he's a writer, he does a magazine, he does photo workshops, and so I've taken the gifts that I've had to form, you know, my work week, basically. So, Carlos, you can do it too. Anybody who's listening to this can do it. If they understand what your gifts are, go out there and do them. So, my answer, I suppose, Carlos, is stay where you are and let people know how good you are compared to other people. That would be what I would do, to be honest with you. I'm in Melbourne. It's, you know, a population of 3 million people. It's a, you know, fairly sprawling metropolis. There's a lot of photographers here. But I have my vision, and people will hire me for it. And that's the way it is. I have my personality. I'm often hired on the basis of my photography and my ability to deal with people in certain, you know, in certain ways. So, you know, those, I have my talents. You no doubt have yours. And I would just stay exactly where you are. So that takes us to the subject of wedding photography, part one. We haven't got a lot of time to deal with it, I suppose. But let's get a start on it. Well, shall we, Bruce?
Sure.
Okay. First of all, I think before we even start on wedding photography, we have to talk about something that's very, very important. And that's the aspect of who you are as a person, which we were just talking about with Carlos's question. Wedding photography is one of the most demanding fields of photography. As we said a minute ago, there's a lot of people who will buy their camera, get into the and advertise that they can shoot a wedding. And I tell you what, I go to websites of photographers in the States, in England, in Australia particularly, and there are all these people who have designed a website and put extremely average wedding photography on there. They get bookings, but the work is awful. It's just awful. I mean, it's just awful. Let me say that again. It's awful. But here's the interesting thing. You know what? Photographers, we know what work is awful. But often, you know, the day-to-day person does not. To them, it's sharp, it's clear, it's colorful, it's taken in a nice park. That's a good photo. And I'm not criticizing people. It's just that they don't see what, you know, you don't know what you don't know. And that looks like a nice picture, and they'll hire a photographer. Another photographer looks on and says, that is just awful. That is terrible. Mm. You think that because you've got a bride, a groom, a vintage car, and an old building that looks nice and all, and you put them all in the one photo, that it's a good picture. It's not. It's rubbish. It's terrible. It's awful. Have you not heard of highlighting a subject? Please, my eye is darting all over the place here. Make it stop on something. But so first of all, yes, you're going to be up against all these people who are trying to get their money back for the DSLR they've bought, and maybe, you know, make a few dollars on photography. But a good wedding photographer is, one, a versatile photographer. On a wedding day, you are a photojournalist, you're a portrait maker, you work with available light, you work with flash, you are a landscape photographer, you're a candid photographer, you are an architectural photographer, you're a fashion and glamour photographer, you're a macro photographer, and you are all of these things. Plus, you are an athlete because you work hard. Man, I'm telling you, you work hard physically on a wedding day. Just keeping up with the itinerary, being the Johnny on the spot with the camera, you are running all day. At the end of a wedding, there are three things that are mine: the couch, the remote control, and a glass of red wine. I'm telling you. And don't, you know, I'm done for. You can't talk to me. Ask me how the wedding went, dear, and I'll tell you. But after that, I just don't have any brains left, because I pour myself into the day. I've shot hundreds of weddings, but this is their one day, and I am responsible for making the most of it photographically. So every wedding is a one-off for me, not the 700th I've done. This is one-off. And so you devote yourself to that day for their sake and for the sake of your professionalism. All of these things you must become. So, and you also have to be a diplomat. You have to see situations wherein you play a role that could be relatively explosive. You know, divorced parents that hate each other. You know, where do you, how do you set them up in a photograph? People that don't necessarily get along. A grumpy bride, suddenly, you know, it's too hot, she's lost it. Relatives of the bride and groom who, you know, cause them problems. You find yourself in this situation, you need to know when to get in, when to get out, what to say, what not to say. These situations arise. And I remember photographing a wedding once where the groom had converted to a particular religion the rest of his family had not approved of. And he'd become a member of the Church of the Latter-day Saints,
right?
A Mormon. And, yep. And you know, these people, I photographed a couple of Mormon weddings and found them delightful people. Mm-hmm. And but the uncle of the groom just could not handle the fact that, one, his nephew had become a member of this church, and I think he'd fallen in love with this girl and, you know, had become a member of the church. How the degree to which he adopted the beliefs is not mine to judge, but I know that he loved this girl. And the rest of his family were so dark on him for doing this. I could just sense it all day.
Wow.
This one uncle had just been giving this poor groom, needling him all day about the fact that he'd become a Mormon, the fact that the wedding was going to be dry, there was going to be no alcohol at the reception, and you know, and then all of a sudden we're just about to launch into the family group photos, which they had scheduled to be done just before the reception. We're doing these family group photos. The uncle needles the groom one last time. The groom all day had been manifesting such Christian self-control. I was marveling at it. But all of a sudden, the groom just lost it his uncle. And, you know, he bawled him out there on the spot. The two of them had a yelling match. The little girl that he was married, that he just married that day, she lost it. She just burst into tears, ran off with her girls. They went upstairs into the little room at the reception venue and she bawled her eyes out. And here I am, and I have not even started on the family photos yet. I've taken about two or three, and I've still got so many more to go. And the best man came up and he explained the situation, and I said, that's cool, I understand, and you know. And then basically the family asked me to stay for the entire reception so that we could do family group photos. And I did. I don't stay for receptions, but I did for the sake of this bride and groom who didn't have a single family photo. I had to stay the whole night just so we could get a few photos of them with their family members. So you have to be very flexible, and you have to be a diplomat, and you have to be a comedian. You know, you've got to make the photo session fun. If I hear so many reports of photographers who are just so boring, you know, I am artiste, you know, you will stand over here, you will do this, I am here, I am Shelton, I am, you know, and bridesmaids who are married, you know, or who've been bridesmaids on other wedding days will just say, oh, Shelton, this is so much fun, oh man, I was a bridesmaid at another wedding and oh, it was so boring, the photographer just, oh, it was, had no personality, and we just, oh, stand here, do this, oh, it was so boring. I was dying for him to go so we could party on at the reception, but they like the way that I keep everything a bit of a giggle and throw myself in there. Everybody has fun. And you know, that only works to your advantage as a photographer, because you get great photos, you got the people enjoying the session, they're in there with you, they're in with the ideas, they're throwing in ideas, everybody's part of it, everybody's having a laugh, and you get a good rap. At the end of the day, if you go to my blog, I've got a wedding blog of testimonials. Go to my website and it'll and go to my wedding section. It'll take you to that blog of people's testimonials. And it, invariably, they say, we had so much fun on the day. Thank you so much for making our day so much fun. Oh, by the way, we really love our photos, too. Now, to me, that is a higher compliment. Because they're taking, if you're a photographer, you're supposed to create good photos. But, you know, you're not hired to actually make the day fun. But the fact that they say that, it means a lot to me. And I know it meant a lot to them. It's their one wedding day. They don't want to remember it as some boring photo session with some artist who's so into himself. You know, you're there for them. You're their employee. And you got to work and you got to be all of those things. So before you even pick up your camera or before you even place a Yellow Pages ad, ask yourself, can I do this? Can I turn up at a wedding and be all of these things? Can I be a candid photographer, like a photojournalist? Can I be Johnny on the spot? Can I get that shot? Can I be an athlete? Am I healthy enough, fit enough? You know, can I do this? Can I handle the personal nature of the photography? Secondly, you know, can I handle all of the things that are going to be called upon me as a photographer? Can I be a photojournalist? Can I be a fashion photographer? Can I be a portrait maker? Can I be an architectural photographer? Can I be a landscape photographer? Can I be a macro photographer? Can I be all of these things? Because I'll tell you what, if you're going to be a successful wedding photographer, you have to be all of those things. You have to walk into a room that people live in, and it's a living room, and you have to work that living room like it's, you know, a photo studio. You got to find the light. You got to find the place. The work of Jerry Gihonis is awesome in this respect. That guy can find a corner of a room and turn it into a masterpiece. And he is just so well known. And if you live in the States, look out for his workshops if you want to be a wedding photographer. He's a Melbourne photographer, Jerry Gihonis, G-I-H-O-N-I-S, X-Site, X-letter, Site Photography, S-I-G-H-T. This guy is a master of looking at just finding the most ordinary places and turning them into, you know, the most incredible photographs. He just has such vision. And that is what a wedding photographer has to do. You walk into the average suburban home and you have to make it look like they've never seen it before. Because that's what we do. So you have to ask yourself before you even embark on this wedding photography biz that is, oh, let's take nice pictures of a bride and groom in a park. Hell no, that is not what it is. You know, and that is what people think wedding photography is. It's not. It certainly is not. You turn up at the bride's house. You have to do, you know, candid photos of her getting ready. You have to do portraits of her, pictures of her and her mom and her dad and her brothers and sisters. Then you turn up at the ceremony at a church or in a garden. You have to pull those pictures out. You got to be Johnny on the spot. You got to get candid kiss and hug photos after. You got to then go somewhere for family photos. You got to then set up photos in a location of their choice or several locations of their choice. You then follow through to the reception. You are not just taking pictures, nice pictures of two people in a park. You're doing so many other things. So before we even embark on part two, which will be arriving at the bride's home step by step, we're going to talk about that next week. let's just, I want you to analyze your work and say, can I do this? And where, and the answer can be yes, provided you're willing to expand on your craft, but analyze your work and say, where am I missing something? Where am I lacking? Do I know how to pose people? Do I know what to look for? Do I know what to recognize as a good place to put people? Where, how to light them? Do I understand the nuances of wedding photography enough? And if you don't, my suggestion would be to hassle every wedding photographer in town and be there to be their assistant and just learn from them. I've taken people on weddings with me who at the end of the day have said, hey, Shelton, thank you so much for taking me today. I've learned one thing, and that is that I could never do this, not in a million years. And that's not praise to myself. I'm not deifying myself in any way or shape or form. I'm just saying that I'm actually commending these people for their humility and their modesty in saying, well, this is something that I don't think I could do. Not well anyway. And then just abandoning the idea and going on to something else. In saying this, I'm not putting anybody off. What I'm basically doing is trying to keep the craft of wedding photography up there. And I'm not saying that anybody who listens to this podcast can do it. Let's just make that very clear. And over the next few weeks, we're going to talk about the things that you will need to know as you go into each stage of the wedding that you will need to learn or know or understand, so that as you go through the various stages, the half a dozen stages or so in a wedding, that you can handle it.
So did you just say you don't think just anybody can do it?
Hell no.
Really?
No, absolutely not. Because of all the things you have to be.
Okay.
Let me clarify.
My only hesitation is I'm a firm believer. I can't remember who it was that said this. It might have been Henry Ford. It might have been somebody else who said that, you know, whatever the mind of man can conceive and believe, he can achieve.
Well, I would agree with that.
I think it comes down to personal commitment.
Perhaps, yes.
Depending on how badly you want it.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Whether or not you can develop those techniques and things that you don't currently have in your repertoire of tricks, yeah. That, you know, if you want it bad enough, you will learn how to do it and how to be it.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay, well, that's a fair enough point. And on that, perhaps to the degree I was speaking, I stand corrected. Okay. Let's just say that we'll put it your way, Bruce. I think that's a very good way of putting it. I suppose all I'm saying is it's not easy. It's hard.
Yeah,
it's
sure.
Very, very hard. But there is an aspect of maybe your personality. If you're a shy person that likes to, you know, not be in the thick of things, it will be a challenge for you.
Yeah,
it really will
sure.
be a challenge for you.
But again, I would say, you know, that is something you can develop if you yes. really, really, really want to be a good wedding yep. photographer.
A wedding photographer. And, you know, there's good money in it, and there's a yeah. lot of personal reward in it.
For sure.
So it's worth certainly pursuing. But it's not something you can just jump into now and say, I'm a wedding photographer. It certainly is not, and we're going to learn why over the next few weeks. But all of those things that I was describing, you've got to be. To be renowned in the industry, and to be, you know, as you said, Carlos, you know, in a high saturation market, to be set apart as one that they would choose, yes, you definitely need to work on those aspects of your photography and of your personality. And, you know, yeah, you've got to be healthy. You've got to be fairly fit and fairly healthy. Carlos, you asked me to drop some names. Jerry Gihonis. Gihonis, that's Jerry as in Jerry Lewis, Jerry, Jerry Gihonis. Yervant Zanzanian, Yervant Zanzanian, Zanzanian. Marcus Bell, is it Martin Schembri, Schembri. These are all great, you know, wedding photographers, Melbourne and Sydney, Australian wedding photographers. That I would certainly suggest, you know, that you could have a look at between now and our next session, and I'll come up with some more. Australia does have some fantastic wedding photographers because the nature of our culture is a little rebellious. You know, would you say that, Bruce?
Yeah.
Nature of the Australian culture is just, you know, a bit rebellious. The whole Anzac culture of our soldiers, et cetera, is just, you know, a little bit rebellious. The Australian soldiers were known to British commanders as just being insubordinate and rebellious, but don't mess with them, you know? And so there's this culture of cut down the tall poppy in Australia, you know, that makes us just sort of be a little rebellious.
We love the underdog.
Yeah. So that means that we don't like rules here, you know. I'm not going to, you know, and by breaking the rules of wedding photography that a lot of photographers stick to, we actually have produced a different style, a different vision, a different perception of wedding photography that has taken America by storm. When well-known Australians go to the United States particularly, because the Americans like to my understanding, you know, follow certain rules of photography, especially in the professional league. When we go there and say, have a look at this, they go, oh, hey, whoa, never thought of that. And they like it. And so Australian photographers have something to say to the rest of the world about the craft of wedding portrait photography. And our work, if you go and have a look at the Australian Institute of Professional Photography, the AIPP website, and you know, photographers belonging to the AIPP, man, you'll see some incredible work. So there's just a few: Martin Shembri, Yervant Zanzanian, Marcus Bell, and Jerry Gihonis that you can have a look at. Next week, we're going to start looking at the process. We're going to go to the home of the bride. We're going to take you step by step through the wedding day. And next week will be the home of the bride before the ceremony. And we'll take you over the next few weeks step by step, so that by the end of our podcasts on this subject, not only will you have learned a lot about wedding photography, but hopefully some skills that you can expand into other fields of your photography. So that's where we're going to be in episode 104.
Fantastic. Looking forward to it.
Me too, actually. I'm really looking forward to it because it's something close to my heart. I love photography, but I don't know. It must be the snag in me. I love shooting a good wedding, and I like to see it done right. I really do, for the couple's sake. For no other reason than for the couple's sake, and to keep the craft of wedding photography up there. So I'm looking forward to doing it myself.
Excellent. Remember, you can drop us an email, shelton@audiotu.com or studio@audiotu.com if you want to write to me. And yeah, I think that'll just about do it for another week.
We are still working on the slide, on the website that I was referring to last week. I'll keep you all posted, and we'll you know, let you know the moment that you can have a look at that too. So
beautiful.
Don't think we've forgotten it for one minute, because trust me, I'm working very hard on it at the moment.
Beautiful. All right, mate. We'll talk with you next week.
You betcha.
Okay. See ya.
Good on you. See ya.
Now, how much of that did you understand?
Audio to You delivers the best quality podcasts direct to your desktop or portable. You be the boss. Hear what you want to hear.
When you want to hear.
Hit us today. And remember, Control-D to bookmark. AudioToYou.com.
It's all over, Marge. It's all over.